traded away our washing machine to get him.
Coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split podcast. We are back once again. I am Rob Calder, the manager of Coach Education, joined this week by Old Faithful, Zoe Carr.
Old Faithful, you're probably right. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
And the new guy, as we've spoken about, the newly appointed Basketball Development Officer at Basketball Victoria, focusing on coach development, Nick Mihai. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to see how you work this mixer. I'm actually really impressed.
I think the term used most often is poorly, where I hit the wrong button or I forget to hit the record button, which happens frequently, or I've turned something down that I need to turn back up. It's bad. Multitasking, not a strong suit, as it turns out. The thing we talk about every week when we jump into the podcast is that you are able to follow along on social media with everything going on at Talking Split. So we have the X channel, formerly Twitter. We have the Instagram channel. We now have a YouTube channel up for coaches. So just at Talking Split, you can't screw this up. Oddly enough, we were talking about this in the office the other day, and there were people within our office that didn't even know we had these. So if they don't know, I'm assuming there are still people out there that don't know. So please follow along. We will have a new drill going up every Monday that you can use at your training sessions. There will be a podcast that drops every Friday. There'll be other little bits of basketball information in between that jumps in there as well. So anything that you're able to do to like, share, subscribe, retweet, all those sorts of cool things, that would be fantastic. As we've sort of alluded to previously, we are in a little bit of a time crunch with how many episodes we have left this year. 9. So there will be 9 episodes left for the remaining parts of this year. If there are any topics that you want covered, send them in. There will be a couple of episodes that will be mailbag episodes. So if you've got like short, sharp questions and those sorts of things that may not have enough for an entire podcast, let us know. But if there is something you want to hear about, shoot it through. We'll come up with some notes on the topic and we can go from there. New person on the pod has somewhat appeared on the pod before in that he's been spoken about a number of times on the podcast. The one being the fateful time that was supposed to be recording some offences at a training session and put his melon in front of the camera and we got none of the content required. But welcome, Nick.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's actually one of the reasons I came on the podcast, right? I needed to clarify
Tell your side of the story.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so it is 100% true. I did stand completely
in
front of
the camera.
So
now it's clear.
Yes, I am still a horrible parker and I still park across 2 parking bays. And I do enjoy the occasional kebab after a Friday night game, which is going to change a little bit for me. So I'm going to have to try and figure out how to maneuver that into my life now.
Tuesdays after the pod. There you go. Yeah, there lunch. You go.
Maybe. Yep. So all you've done is validate all the stereotypes we had about you previously. But for those of the out there that may not know who you are, what you're about, what your basketball career to this point has looked like, take us through it.
Yeah, so I played for a long time up until probably the age of 23. Started at 7 years old. I've been coaching for 15 years, specifically in the VJBL area. I've been a development coach in the state teams. I've been a selector in the state teams, and I've been an assistant coach for the Vic Metro state teams as well. I've done 6 years of CBL and NBL1 as an assistant coach, and I'm currently with the NBL Southeast Phoenix as a video coordinator.
Did you plan on going down this path when you first started playing at 7 years old? Like, was this what you anticipated this would look like?
Not at all. It's actually an interesting story, right? So, story time.
Oh. Here we go. Jeez. I've done this before.
So when I finished playing, I was a little bit burnt out, a little bit sore, and I had a coach by the name of Nick Abdusevich. And he actually was the one who steered me in the right direction, and it was very, very simple. I said, Nick, I'm not going to play anymore. And he goes, Nick, you are either going to play or you're going to coach. You can't do nothing. And I go, all right, fine, I'll coach then. Sort of in spite. But then when I got into coaching, I loved it. And, very thankful that he gave me that very sound advice at a pivot point in my life. So, yeah.
It is huge, and it would be remiss of us not to mention Nick, obviously, as someone that heads up one of the biggest programs in probably Australia, in all honesty, in the Melbourne Tigers, has had a massive impact on so many coaches throughout the landscape. It's amazing how many people that have had either been on staff with him, been coached by him, just had a coffee with him, like has had a massive impact on basketball throughout this country that probably goes a little bit unnoticed, I think at times, like, people just, oh, it's just Melbourne Tigers. It's like, yeah, but there's a reason Melbourne Tigers have been good for a long period of time now, and that sustains success. And, you know, Nick's a big part of that. So it's, haven't caught up with Nick for a while, and probably should, actually, now that I sort of think about it. But it is a really big part in that, as coaches, we don't always realise the part we play and the potential impact and implications of what are flippant comments like that of you're not doing nothing ends up, you know, with you sitting here at the moment. So it's a long process to get to where you sort of end up, but starts early.
He also, like, the care that he shows in the coach development, people don't appreciate it, people don't hear it very much. Like, he actually caught up with Dave Peters and myself at Casey, and he just, the big smile on his face to see where we are, knowing that we were once his players. And yep. Yeah, it's just a really big thing. It's a special thing, definitely.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. So the other thing we'll get into, that was the informal coach shout out, but we have the formal coach shout out.
You know you make me wanna shout out my cold chairs, out my cold chairs, out my cold chairs.
The look on both of your faces, that intro needs to change. That is the worst of all intros.
I'll leave that with you. You can figure out what that's going to look like.
No, Nick, that's not my job. That's your job.
No, it's definitely not my job. Like, it's Nick, it's now your job. This is how this works. The chain of screams, it just goes down the line as to the next person. But
I really enjoyed the song. I don't know.
See, there you go. It finishes now.
Yeah. So, that has nothing to do with the fact you're his boss.
Hey.
No, it has everything to do with the fact we filled out that questionnaire and we got identical answers.
Yeah, that was a little alarming yesterday, actually. We okay, we'll break the fourth wall here, I suppose. It's we did actually have a full staff planning day yesterday, and we had it was like a personality type survey with what are your strengths and what are your weaknesses. Turns out, and this is not a great indication as to where we're at, Nick and I are near on identical answers with what we're good at. And so it turns out the things or the strengths for both of us was coming up with ideas. The downside, though, Nick?
Is that we have an inability to finish those ideas.
Yeah. So, you know, you get a little bit of an idea. We have lots of good ideas. The implementation and the finishing off of those ideas does maybe lack a little bit. So we might get halfway through this podcast and just stop recording randomly for no reason. But it was an interesting. We're actually looking at redesigning that for coaches to sort of find out what sort of players do you have in your team. It's a very scientific survey, as it turns out, from 1970 or something like that. We're maybe not quite in that realm, but it would be fascinating to go through those types of things. It did spark a lot of conversation among staff members as to who was similar. Zoe, you and Bestie, quite similar?
Yes, we were the same.
Go figure. Jenna, teamwork orientated. That was her strength. Coops MIA.
Hasn't done it yet.
Yeah,
he hasn't. But he'll do it today.
He'll do it today. So be interesting to see what he comes up with as well. But anyway, back to coach shout-outs. Like, don't make me play the music twice. This one has come from Wyndham Basketball. So Lee Bellingham, who's assisted and volunteered as part of our selection panel for the VJBL tryouts. Over 700 players participating and has not missed a single session yet. His partner's at home with a newborn and has been a massive support to the court coaching and evaluating players as best he can, and is coaching the under-14 girls this year and is a massive value to the club. This is a time of year where coaches do ridiculous hours trying to get on court, trying to help out other coaches and team selections and get everything right so that the kids can actually get on court and play the game. I've lost track of how many coaches have lost an entire weekend last weekend just trying to get through trials to try and get the right kids in the right spots. And I mean, I know, Zoe, you went through trials last week for a number of your programs as well, and the requests for feedback have been thick and fast.
Yeah. we had a bit of a change to the process, so we don't normally put what the process is for feedback on the emails that go out. But because we made a bit of an adjustment. The adjustment was that they have 7 days to request it. In one of our last programs that we did earlier in the year, we had someone request feedback 6 weeks after the event. So, you know, because that was different, we put that in an email. That was probably a mistake. But, yeah, because ultimately feedback's becoming a bit of a dirty word because feedback's not what is wanted. Justification and a bit of a whinge is often what we're finding is what is wanted, and it's not generally from the athletes. It's a lot of the time from the parents. The hard part about it is, you know, we often receive emails or have conversations where people are being 100% raw and honest with us, and we can't meet professionally, we can't meet that energy, which then has us walking away a bit from human nature, a bit frustrated and exhausted with the whole thing. And that isn't just subject to our programs and what we do. It happens in Clubland as well. So, you know, I think the demand for feedback at the moment is skewed in the wrong way. I think there should be some feedback, but what's being expected now, I think, is unrealistic and unreasonable.
Yeah, especially with the volume.
Yeah.
Like, you hear from Wyndham there, 700 players have gone through trials. You can't provide feedback to all 700 kids in that situation. Like, yeah. It's just not sustainable from what it looks like. So I think there is some value, though, in when you're going through trials, having some notes that you can at least refer back to on each player. And it's like, look, you know, and I know the HP guys talk about their six pillars, yep, so to speak. That's something that you can easily refer back to along the way with, okay, here were some areas that we thought you were pretty good at, but here are some areas we think you need to go away and work on. And the hard part is, I think sometimes when you say, look, you need to work on your offensive game or your skills package, you know, it's at an introduction level. People get a little bit offended by that. And it's like, no, it's introductory level based on if you're an under-18 athlete or if you're a senior athlete. It's, you know, there is no...
That could be the level you are supposed to be at the moment.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. There is something that will be more advanced. That's okay.
And that's the hard part too. So, you know, you have that honest conversation, and it is taken with offence, but there's no care about the offence coming back the other way when comments like, you didn't even watch my child, or, you know, are being thrown at you thick and fast when you know that you have. So, yeah, I think I think we need to do some work in that area with just a bit of education, I think. And to athletes, ultimately, if you've spent a day on court, so our camps, our trial camps are all day. If you've been on court all day, you've received feedback all day. Like, that's what you won't have gone through that whole thing having had nobody speak to you. So that feedback is what should be going into your journals, and that's what you're working on. But the next part is, what are you going to do with that feedback? Are you just going to then at the next thing request more feedback? Or are you going to work on those things, get them better, then once they're at that point, you know, come and ask for that feedback again? I think there's a lot of just constant feedback requesting without the work on what's actually being provided, which then again makes it seem like a little bit of a waste of time.
Yeah, the implementation is a big part of it. Yeah. And look, that might be something that we can work on, and I'm looking at you, Nick, because this may end up being your problem pretty soon. Where, look, if we are assessing players, for argument's sake, on six areas, like, is there a little bit of a list of some drills that they can work in within those six areas that can maybe start to develop that area of their game that might be lacking, whether it be the competitiveness, the decision making, those sorts of things? Like, that could be something that we can start to look at, I suppose.
Yeah, I think where the difficult part comes in, and I know trials that I've been involved in as well, very different to yours, Zoe, but you know, when you look at the VJBL level, the under 12s, and they're going, I need feedback. Well, it's going to be 10. It's going to be really generic, right? Like, yeah. It's I almost sometimes would love to say, okay, well, you've got to work on how to manage adversity and being told no. That's probably the biggest feedback I can give you right now, because if you want this pathway in basketball, you're going to get told no a lot. Mm. So you probably need to work on that first. And they're very young to understand that now, but it's more of a message to the parents sometimes.
Yeah, and I think it is valuable. I don't want to seem dismissive of it, because there are some people that come with genuine, hey, we're new to this, we don't know anything about basketball, we just need to know where they're at. Like, is this something we should continue to pursue? Is this something that's kind of, hey, you know, it's nice to have and they enjoy it, so we'll support it as long as we can support it. And there are others, as you say, Zoe, that are just looking to complain. And we are getting to that point over the next probably fortnight where VJBL teams are going to start being released, and we're going to see a lot of really happy people. We're going to see a lot of really disappointed people, and there'll be obviously a stack of things in between. So we need to be really careful as well, in particular if you're the coach walking into that, that you might have in your team a sliding scale from kids that are elated to have made that team through to kids that are really disappointed they didn't make a higher team, and how we manage them and how we work with them and their parents and their support network that sits around them to get a really good outcome for them is going to be vital, because, you know, grading will start before we can even blink, which is what we're going to try and get into now. It's going to be tough. So trying to make sure that everyone's on the same page, everyone feels connected to their group, everyone knows, well, okay, although I'm experiencing some disappointment now, this is not forever. And it is incredible how often a kid that feels maybe a touch aggrieved that they haven't made a program or a team really enjoys where they end up falling to is incredible. It happens all the time.
Yeah, I think if I could, I guess, put a plea out to any parents that potentially listen to the pod is, you know, there's often a lot said about when we're talking about interactions with referees and things, like, you know, remember they're human, and absolutely, it's the same for coaches. They're no different. In fact, they're not being paid to be there. So disappointment is understandable and acceptable. You're allowed to be disappointed. If you weren't disappointed, you probably didn't care about it, you know, to a point where you'd want to, you know, have that athlete in your team anyway. So disappointment is fine. No one's saying you can't be disappointed, but please manage the response, because these are our volunteers. They're not perfect, but I can guarantee they're also not out to try and hurt anybody or, you know, do anything on purpose. They're just trying to do the best they can. You know, requesting feedback and all those things are fine, but just please make sure you do it the right way, because we are losing coaches at a rapid rate because of these sort of interactions. This time of year is so dangerous for us with coaches, because it's the hardest part of the year from a confrontation perspective.
Yeah, it certainly kicks off. And look, I used to love this time of year. Like, for me, the opportunity to go through trials, see where kids are at, which kids have progressed over the last 12 months. Are they where they were previously? Have they really improved? You get a new team, which is almost a little bit invigorating as a coach, because, look, let's face it, it's a tough slog at times. When you get to sort of June, July, August, it's like, man, is this season going to end? And then it does, and you're straight back into trials again. And you just kind of rinse, repeat. This was always the sort of time of year where I felt a little bit more enthusiastic, I suppose, because it's like, actually, it's a bit of a blank slate. Like, now I've got a new team. Now I get to work with some things. I get to work with some kids I haven't worked with before. I get to see if I can progress some kids that I have worked with before. That's fun as well. But there are also probably a few coaches, as you mentioned, Zoe, that are kind of teetering on the edge a little bit of, do I want to do this again? And a really negative confrontational type interaction could be the catalyst for them walking away from the sport. And we're not in the position to have coaches walk away from the sport. We need our best coaches coaching.
Oh, and well, our competition, our sport is thriving. Yep. It's growing every year. So as a result, we need more resources. We need more coaches. We obviously need more venues. We need all that sort of stuff. But if nobody's willing to coach the team, that team doesn't get put in. So, you know, just a little bit of consideration for that. And again, I'm not saying all parents. It's not. But the ones that are bad, and everyone straight off the top of their head can think of somebody that comes to mind when we're talking about this.
It's usually not them.
And it, like,
yeah. You know, if you don't know a bad parent, you might be the bad parent.
But if you know somebody that's perhaps behaving like that, or if you reflect and think, oh, maybe that was me once, you know, I think we just all need to, like I've mentioned before, our coaching attitudes towards referee needs to improve. Our parent attitude towards coaches needs to improve as well.
Yep. Easy to say, not easy to do, which we understand.
No,
so
not at all. Especially it is a two-way street. They care about their kids. That's all it is. Like, absolutely. It's, you know, and it's completely understandable, but also understand that that person is somebody else's kid too. So, yep. You know, they're not bulletproof.
No, not at all. So the topic of today, as we get sort of 20-ish minutes in, we should probably hit on at some stage. No. It's a very valid point you make. Purely because of what we're about to go into now, which is how you would actually start your season. So you've picked your team, you've got your new group of kids. What is first, I suppose? Because that is a bit of a daunting period. It's like, well, am I trying to plan out the next 12 months? Am I trying to plan out the next 12 days? How many times do I get them? Do I have to prepare them for grading? What does it look like now? How am I trying to integrate everyone in? I picked a team, but then two kids left the team. So now I've got two different kids and my team dynamic has completely shifted. That happens a lot as well in that sort of world. But what's the first thing you would be doing, Nick, when you get your team for the first time? What are you doing before anything else?
Well, to break that down even more, I really believe that the first three things that you run in a training session is what they're going to think you hold the most value to. So if you put the first three things down, you can say whatever you want before that practice, but they're going to do those things because they're going to go, that's what he wants to see because it's the most important to him because it's the first thing that's on his mind. For me, it's 4v4 shell. That's coming in straight away because you can factor in closeouts, but it's also you can do it both sides of the ball, so you can do spacing as well. That's going to be super important early. That's your foundation. And then there's some sort of side pick and roll. But to be more specific, a seam pick and roll, because I see that more and more. So I'm very much more of a coach that's seeing what's happening, the trends in the previous season, and trying to counter that and try and stay ahead. And the seam pick and roll seems to be the biggest thing in the VJBL season because it's a little bit more difficult to guard and figure out. And then after that, I'm just adding the fifth player and adding some sort of concept in. So if you're a post type of coach, then you're putting them in the low post. That's fine. If you're two or three side, then you put that in as well. But they're the main things. 4v4 shell, spacing, side pick and roll coverage, which is usually a hard show because that's the most difficult one to teach.
Interesting. I realized I framed that question really poorly when you started giving your answer because it's actually it's a right answer, so to speak. I was going with team meeting first. But that's a me thing. Before I'm even thinking about the on-court stuff, which is valuable. I don't mean to dismiss that by any stretch. The first thing I want is a team meeting. I want all the parents in the room. I want all the kids in the room. I want to lay out some expectations for, hey, I'm your coach. Here's who I am. Here's what I'm about. Here are the things that I'm going to focus on. Make sure the parents can all hear it. They can be around what it needs to look like. I need a team manager. be very careful how you get your first team manager, because you can get some great ones, but you can get some diabolical ones in there as well.
So if you know a team manager in that group, grab them. Don't even give them a chance to offer. You approach them and you get them, because a team manager can make or break your season.
Absolutely. And I've had some brilliant ones, but I've had some ones that it's like, geez, I should have done a resume check on that as well. you look back.
But it is funny you mentioned the team meeting, because I don't have them on the first session.
Yeah, right.
I don't. I come from a space where there's induction days.
Okay, yep, fair point.
Team managers are run by a separate department as well, very organized. So there's a lot of information that's given to them prior to those sessions, and that's coming out anyway. So I don't have time. I have an hour and a half.
Yep.
So I need them on the floor, and they need to learn to play together really quickly. Now, sometimes there's groups of them that have played together, which you're lucky, but a lot of the time they don't know how to play together. And I have to, hey, we're going to put it in. So when those practice games come, we can fix it then. So I'm not having those meetings. Yep. I'm more of the coach that doesn't have a chat after the game either. I'll just shake the hand, talk to you Tuesday, and I'm out.
Yep. Kebab place closes in 15 minutes. I've got to get there quick.
100%. You're on to me. Yeah. I can say it now, but no one...
But it's a valid point you make, because there are some programs that do a parent induction day. They have a team manager information session, those types of things. I must admit, it is... It's one thing that a couple of clubs that I've done previously, it's like, okay, ask your parent group, is there anyone that wants to be team manager? Then you submit that back to the club. They'll do a little bit of a check for, is this going to be the right person? What do we need them to do? And that way it's out of your hands as the coach, which would be a best case scenario, but there is also a lot of volunteers that are required to get that done, as well as potentially paid staff that some associations and clubs just don't have. So you do need to be a little bit mindful as to what that team manager looks like, what they'd be responsible for. The whole collecting money and chasing money nightmare, I get it, but that's kind of part of their deal. Scoring rosters, video rosters, all those sorts of things. If you're not in a stadium that has Glory League, proud sponsors of Basketball Victoria, you can sort of work out, do I need to bring an iPad every week? Do I need to bring an iPhone? Does that require someone else to go and film games for me? Does that rotate through? Does that now, all those sorts of things, just stuff that you don't want to deal with as a coach, because you are getting on court, trying to get your team cohesive, where it needs to be straight away to try and work through it, because it's not easy. But I think it is a good place to also outline some expectations. well, okay, what are the things that we really need to go through? And as you mentioned, Nick, like your induction days and all that sort of stuff, that might take care of a few of these things straight away. But for me, you should be at practice at least 20 minutes early, like bare minimum. You should be at games probably half an hour early. Just so, again, if you go to the wrong venue, you've got time to get to the right venue and you'll still be able to make those sorts of things. For mine, that's a great time straight away to be able to implement those, because I think if we don't set our expectations early, similar to the on-court stuff you were talking about, Nick, we need to make sure that we get the off-court stuff right too.
Yeah, and I think a couple of really big ones for me are what is the process to organise a meeting or something with the head coach? How do you want that process to be? So mine was always that you send me a text message and what you want, and then we'll organise a time to meet, to have those discussions. I'm talking parents here, so it doesn't just ambush you or come out of nowhere. Have that process set. Another one is also things like if you're in an age group that, you know, there's potential state team kids that could be in there. You know, what's the expectation when they're on and they drop a session per week? You know, are you happy for them to still start? Or, you know, what are the things that would stop you from being able to start? You know, is it that you just don't come to training, or, you know, you go to footy instead of bar, or whatever it is? I don't care what it is really, but it's more what are your expectations that could affect court time? And so then everyone's on the same page, and then you don't have to try and, you know, run with it as it comes, and you're not like dodging asteroids. You've got a clear path, and you know what you're doing. And everyone, whether they like it or not, everybody is on the same page.
How long are those meetings going for you when you're running them? Just out of curiosity,
I'm 15 minutes tops.
Yeah,
and that's before practice. So it's like, hey, if we're training at 9 o'clock, I need everyone there at 8:45. And I don't want it to go for 15 minutes, but I always know that someone's going to be late for the first session, which, you know, normally doesn't put you in the graces on that world. But I'm about a 15-minute person with just – and look, to be honest, it's not a lot of two-way interaction. It's a lot of here's what I need from you. If you need more from me, follow up with me afterwards. And I'm happy to do that via email, via text, whatever the case might be. Similar to what you were talking about, Zoe, like I think it is valuable to have that here's how you can contact me. But also set some boundaries as to here's when you can't.
Mm.
I can't deal with you straight after a game. Like, that's a really good time to put that out first thing, where it's like, look, straight after a game, tensions are probably high. Please don't contact me on that night. Happy to hear from you the next day. But I think by setting those boundaries, or just, look, you know what? Monday night is my one night off per week where I don't have to work late. I don't have basketball stuff on. That is my family night. Please don't contact me on a Monday night. Get me on the Tuesday. Like, those sorts of things I think are really good ways. And I'm big on boundaries with players and parents in particular. As coaches, we want to be accessible all the time because it's the right thing to do, or we're trying to help out. You know, it's
givers by nature.
Yeah,
right?
It's that volunteer giving mindset that comes through. But we also need to protect our own space, which is, hey, sometimes just too much. Like, I just need a little bit of separation where I can go home on a Monday night and just watch Love Island or something like that if you really want to. No. I was trying to remember what Coops watched that he said. It was Below Deck. It was Below Deck. Yeah. Sorry, that's where I was going with it.
I knew the first one. I didn't know this.
Yeah, exactly right. But I think that's valuable. Like, set it really clearly to start off with what you expect from the parents on that sort of thing. And there'll be parents that really want to engage with you, and there'll be parents that are just like, no, we're good. Like, you got them. Like, I don't need to talk to you about anything. I'll say hi as I walk through, and it's not, there's no animosity or anything like that. They're just like, no, you're the coach, you coach them. Like, that's your job. It's different.
That was really evident for me. Like, last few years, it was under 18s.
Yep.
So it's a very different conversation when they just go, oh, cool, they made your team, awesome. And they drop the kids off and they're gone.
Yep.
And they come back. So organizing a parent meeting is difficult.
Yep.
But I know that where I was, which was Casey, we had mandatory meetings. So it would be at this date we would have the first meeting, and at this date we would have the second meeting. But that was more individual with players and parents, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's valuable to also let the parents know, look, there will be times where we need to meet during the year, whether it be for individual feedback, whether it be for some goal-setting stuff, whatever the case might be. Like, I think there is some value in that. But just break the ice early. Know who the parents are. Get them to know you. One of the ones, and I think I've mentioned it on here before, I always sort of flag, look, if there are any behavioural learning difficulties with your children, please let me know. Let me know if I need to work around some things. Like, do they hate to be in demos? Do they really enjoy being those sorts of things? That's where you can flag, I think, really early on what you need to get done.
Yeah, and they don't have to answer that particular question in the group. It's more you flagging as the coach, that's information you need to help their child have a better experience. So, you know, come and let me know or send me an email, send me whatever. But, yeah, just they don't feel like they have to blurt out any learning difficulties in front of the rest of the group.
They never do.
No. Like, it's well, and look, we've had a lot of, you know, a lot of times where people haven't told us at all, and it's not until it's become a problem that they then reveal that there's a learning difficulty or there's something else at play. Again, I'd implore parents to please let coaches know what they're what they're potentially dealing with your child, because again, it's all about that experience for them, and it's not about finding out stuff and trying to gossip about it and tell the whole world. It's about setting an environment for your child to succeed. And I know there's been some teams that state teams that have come through in my time in this role that have had some athletes that, had we known what was going on behind the scenes with that particular athlete, we could have structured things completely differently that would have allowed them to not get to a point where it was breaking point. That information can be so helpful to ensuring your kid has a better experience.
Well, it just creates like that level of, hey, this is a bit more than basketball too. Like, you need to understand that there's a little bit of empathy there. There's some emotional intelligence from the coach coming through that is able to sit there and say, hey, I'll do everything I can to make them good as a basketball, but I need to know the full picture of who I'm dealing with in front of me, because we can only do what we know. And if we don't know, how are we expected to help those athletes? So not always the easiest thing. Icebreakers, Nick. Do you use them with your team, or is shell drill your icebreaker to get everyone happy and knowing each other?
I'd love it to be my icebreaker. It would just get an extra 5 minutes in. Yeah. No, I do have icebreaker drills as well. Like, a lot of the times when I was coaching 18s, I had all four teams, and I wanted them to train like a squad. So we would do the rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you would go rock, paper, scissors. Whoever wins, you got to chant their name. So you get to the end where it's just two on two, rock, paper, scissors, and one group's chanting one name and one group's chanting the other name. It's a great way to just get them yelling and making noise and getting to know each other.
Anyone can win that.
Correct.
Like, you don't have to be the best player. You don't have to be the biggest, the strongest, the fastest. Anybody can win that.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And it's a great way to just loosen them up a little bit as well.
Yeah, because there's so many nerves coming to that first session, I find, with kids. Like, they're a little bit apprehensive coming in with, who is my coach? What are they about? Like, you may have a reputation as a coach, whether you know it or not. You just might be someone that's been recruited into the program, and they're like, who is this person? I've never seen them around other than at trials. It's a really good way that just break the nerves, because there will be some kids that have potentially come from another club or another team that are really shy, quiet, nervous kids that don't want to interact, or they might be intimidated by other players. It's like, man, I'm playing on a team with a kid that's played in a state team. Like, they are, I can't even talk to that player. And it's like, no, you can. Mm-hmm. Like, and you're going to have to. Like, and you better call their name when a screen's coming. Like, it's all those sorts of things that start to come into it. Like, the icebreaker thing really can't be understated, I think. It's a big part of it, and it's stuff that you can do off court before you start your training session as well. Like, I'm not going to say waste time, but you don't want to waste some time when you've actually got your 90 minutes. You want to get stuff done. But if you can get it done before practice, and that might be as simple as, hey, turn up 10 minutes early or whatever the case might be, go and find something out about someone else. That's something I've done a little bit with teams previously. It's like, we'll give them 5 questions. They need to go and find out the answers from all the other players in their teams. And it's like, which is your favorite NBA or WNBA team? Which school do you go to? If you had to shoot a game winner, where would you shoot it from? Like, what type of shot do you want? Those sorts of things. And just drill down a little bit more as to, well, okay, do you actually know your teammates, or are they just there that, you know, you're spending 12 months with these people. you've got to get along with them. So the more you can know about each other and the more you can do in that world, I think the more value there is.
I think now probably clarify what icebreaker is, but end of the session.
Yep.
Of that first session as well, and I do it continuously throughout the season. I completely stole this off Al Westover, by the way, but words of inspiration. Yeah. So I would get all four teams together, and we would pick one player from each team. They would come out, and they would say something positive about the session. Sometimes I've done, who's the most famous person you've ran into? And just get them publicly speaking and realize that you can communicate amongst your peers. That stuff really helps in the basketball world as well, and just gets them, like, they grow up very quickly when they can talk amongst their peers.
Well, and just the ability to talk in front of people, I think as well. Like, there are some really shy, nervous kids that don't want to have their voice heard. And I know you talk about it a lot, Zoe, in particular with the female athletes. Like, just trying to get them to be okay in their space is a big part of what you do. But having them have the confidence and the courage to sort of talk amongst is such a big thing.
Yeah, like, own your environment. You know, it's, you don't have to be an extrovert to be a basketballer, but you do have to talk. Like, it's as simple as that. If you can't talk or communicate with confidence and clarity, you can't play. So if it's either something that you have to work through if you are of an introvert nature, or something that you just have to get better at, because we see a lot with girls, it's as soon as they step off the floor, you can't shut them up. Like, they're so loud, they talk, they're, you know, all that sort of stuff. Step onto the floor and there's a real fear of being judged, particularly in a negative way, like of, you know, oh, she's bossy, or she's a bitch, or she's this, or she's that. And so just trying to break that cycle and that stigma of, you know, if you want to be a basketball player, you have to communicate. To be honest, if you want to sort of go anywhere, really, you have to be able to communicate your thoughts and your feelings. Just trying to create an environment where they recognize that that's not just what they need to do, that's their expectation. Because if it's an expectation, they're more likely to do it because they want to please. Whereas if we sort of say, oh, do you mind, you know, talking a bit, they're not going to do it. And then obviously the follow through with that is making sure that you're on top of if there is any niggly sort of rubbish that comes, kid stuff, you know, like kid behavior, that you jump on top of that straight away and have it known that it's not acceptable.
Has that improved over the years for the girls?
Yeah, it has, but it's a constant work in progress.
What's worked? I'm just curious to know what it is that's been done, that's been working.
So a few things. So obviously I start every cycle, so every trial, with the expectation that they, you know, if I ask a question today and the answer comes back and I just sort of like hunch my shoulders and withdraw into my space and speak really quietly, that's not going to be acceptable today and it's not impressive for us and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So again, sets the tone, consistency with that message throughout the session. But then once we've got them into the programs, because it is hard in a selection environment because there's the nerves and stuff on top of that. So, but once we're into the program, we have peer-led drills. So coaches aren't allowed to speak. And it has to be all athlete-driven. So if they want something, they need to ask for it effectively from their peers. We'll also do drills where we will nominate a player to be in charge of that drill. So it and in like when we do some scrimmage stuff on Saturdays, there'll be a captain of the team and it's their job to run subs. It's their job to give direction, do all of that, and we mix that around throughout the day. So some kids are natural. They love doing it. other kids, it's a bit of a grind, but you see every time we make them do it, they just get that little bit better. And then when we see them go either into their own age group, if they're one of the younger ones, like I had an under 14 at a Saturday session this year be one of the captains and have to tell everybody what to do, tell under 18s what to do. It works if they buy in, but it also, I've got just such a wonderful group of athletes that like those under 18s were eyeballing her, nodding, you know, on board what she was saying. You need that as well. So I'm really lucky that we've got that because that helps obviously aid that too. But it's putting them in positions where they have no other choice but to lead.
Yep, big part of it. And it, I mean, that communication piece is big, which is why I would imagine you started with shell drill when you get on court. There's nowhere to hide. You got to talk. Like, if you can't say split when you're on split, we know about it pretty quickly. And that means you can stop. You can really highlight the expectations of, hey, that's not what we do here. This is not what we're going to be. This is how it needs to look. Like, and I do like the idea of starting with a defensive drill first. It's like, hey, this is going to be the backbone of our year. This is going to be our constant. We're not going to compromise defensively with what we do. The offense, okay, that will change. Swings and roundabouts, who's making shots, what sort of shots are we getting, that sort of stuff. But if your defense is your constant, especially when you're on court and you can be a good communicating team, well, that will give you, like we've all seen it. We all play against a team where defensively they're loud, they're almost obnoxious to a point where how often they talk stuff and it's like, man, it's worth like an extra 10-15 points to that team. Like straight away you look down there and it's like, geez, they're dialed in with what's going on. I like the idea of starting with defensive stuff and in particular like little breakdowns of what it is. Like I know for the Melbourne Tigers faithful out there, like first cutter drill and second cutter drill, like that was a staple almost of a lot of training sessions with, actually, hey, you better be good at this.
Then.
Yeah, I can imagine. Okay, set this, walk out there, then I'll flash to this. But it's what it is. And it's like, well, hey, you know, this is going to be a big part of what we are this year. This is our identity. And for them, yes, it was on the offensive end, which I think is still okay. But for them, hey, you better cut properly. You better screen properly. You better get to the next spot properly. You better pass properly because this is going to be a constant of what our team looks like over the course of these next 12 months. You've got to be prepared to set a bit of a tone, I feel like, with that first session. So,
but it's also not just about setting the tone with the skill set when we're talking communication. It's also what they're doing off the floor. So my athletes get lit up a little bit if there's gaps in the session. And what I mean by that is, you know, we're in a rotation, for example. So like a team's coming off, a new team's coming on, or, you know, we're rotating from spot to spot. If that takes too long because we were disorganized while we were off, that's, again, another, you know, another area where you can step in and I guess not force but encourage communication and leadership whilst off the floor.
See, I would, to encourage communication with juniors, I would set up a drill, like say a shooting drill, but I wouldn't tell them how to rotate.
Yeah.
And then as they would go, well, how do I rotate? And I go, that's all right, you got it. And I'll walk off and pretend to talk to the assistant and they would have to figure it out. And
yep.
I go, don't say anything to them.
Yeah.
And that way is a really good way as well to kind of cheat code a way to get them to start talking to each other to figure out the drill.
Yep. And that's similar sort of process because it's, hey, I don't care how you do it. I don't care who comes on in the next row. I don't care. But it needs to be quicker than it is. And to do that, whilst that group's doing, you know, on the floor and doing it, you better be sorting that out.
Well, and there's times they get it better. Like I took a session for someone a couple of weeks back and same deal, did a drill. And I got halfway through it and I was like, geez, I can't remember how they rotate out of this. Like the first bit started, it's like, geez, I've gone blank on this. And I was trying to like bluff my way through what was going on. And it's like, I can't remember if a corner lift or was corner back down. And one of the players is like, all right, so what's going to happen is I'm going to go from this line to that line and you're going to go from that one. And it's like, oh, that's better than what I had. Like, that's no problem at all. But it happens at times as a coach where it's like, well, actually, a little bit of player empowerment goes a very long way, especially early on. It's like, hey, we're in this together.
Well, if you're trying to create leaders, you can't dictate to them the whole time.
Yep.
Because otherwise, the only leadership style they'll have is dictatorship, and that's not how our sport works. So to see that, they have to see that they have, like you said, ownership, but they also need to be in an environment where, you know, if they do step up and say something like, hey, this is the rotation, great. As long as it works, who cares? Like, don't be so held on to your way that it might – you'll get more out of allowing that rotation than you would rotating the way you want it to rotate, yeah, if that makes sense.
And it's such an exhausting way to coach.
Yeah.
I've been there. I've been that coach who's, like, tried to dictate everything. It's exhausting. It's not fun. It's not enjoyable. Mm. It's like work.
And not for anybody though, right? Correct. Like, everyone, yeah, ends up having a horrible time.
Yep. But I think there is an element too where you want to be able to plan your training session, because this is a big part of what we do as well as coaches. And this is, in particular, I see it a lot early on. They'll plan their first three training sessions like to the minute, and it will be near on militant with what that needs to look like. But all of a sudden, week four, there's no session plan. It's like, hold on, you can't go from one to the other. Like, if it was important to you in week one, it better be important to you in week four. Yes, you can be loose with it. And I think I've spoken about it on this a couple of times where I used to be, I'll type out my training session. This is going to be looked and finally manicured and printed. And then 3 minutes before the training starts, oh, I can't make it. Yeah. And it's like, okay, that drills out, and you've got to figure it out. So I went to a point now where usually 15 to 20 minutes before my training session, I'd sit down with pad and pen. It's like, well, okay, this is the stuff I want to get through. Now I know who I've got coming with me. But that was a bit of a process I went through continually. But the biggest thing that I sort of found worked early on was transition stuff and little small-sided games. Mm. Like little 2-on-1, 3-on-2, 4-on-3. That was brilliant early on in the season, just because high reps, high volume, they're excited because they get to play. Like that's really what they're there for in the first place. But now you get to break down some of the things that you want. Like I mentioned, first and second cutter drill. Well, okay. In isolation, they're a boring drill. But by the same token, if you go both sides of the floor or both ends of the floor and you're going to a score with someone, now all of a sudden there's a little bit of competition involved with it. And like we ran like one of the state teams, so it was the 2015 group, like we ran that swing offense, which was a lot of shuffle cut, flex cut, was the makeup of it. And we had some drills that we would run at the start of every training session, which were coming off that shuffle cut, coming off that flex cut, and there was just rinse and repeat effectively what it looked like. We were maybe 3 months into that, and there was still some juice at the start of every training session, because it was a real big thing of you got to beat the other end. And like whether we went starters and bench or whether we'd sort of mix them up, it's like, no, we don't want to lose. And all it takes is one person to fudge a layup, and because you're only going to like 9, you miss the layup, you're done. Like your team's automatically going to lose this thing. But that was a great way to start our training sessions because there was competition involved. And whether it's the competition where you're playing against someone or you're playing against the clock or the other end time and score, I found that to be a lot of fun. And it was almost like, well, now you own the session, because when we walk in, you know what our first drill looks like. Like straight away, it was like, hey, first cutter drill, we're on. I really enjoyed that. Like it was nice for me to sort of get a little bit of a gauge, because then when they're going through that, I can start to look at both ends and it's like, well, okay, who's really kind of keyed into this? Who needs a little bit more attention because they're not quite dialed into this session that, for whatever reason it might be. So I found that to be a really good way. Like competition in drills, I cannot stress enough is how good that is early.
I think too what goes with that is, because I have a similar thing, we start every session with 4v4. Free play or 3v3, depending on how many, like where I am, like what hub I'm at, whatever, but generally 4v4. And, you know, like as coaches, especially in clubland, there's so many things that can come up that can make you late for practice. Like you could be, it could be traffic, it could be work, it could be fat, it could be anything. So if you've got the same start to your session, I'm not saying that means you can turn up late, but if something happens, your team aren't stressed about what's going to happen, what they should be doing. You know, they warm up and they go straight into that first drill, and it just buys you that little bit of extra time as well for you to get in there and you know, not have to stress and or waste time. Like where your kids are sitting there waiting for you and you're 10 minutes late, for example, you know, and they've done nothing but jack threes or half court shots while they're waiting for you.
Which tends to be what happens, let's face
it. But they can get into that. And again, it's a part of that ownership. You know, they know that, hey, if something has happened and I'm not here, this is what you're doing to start until I get here. And, yeah, again, helping with leaders but helping maximize your time.
I think at that start, Rob, what you were talking about before, you hit the nail on the head with one word, competitive. Please, coaches, do not run 5-on-0 the moment you get your team. They will check out in the first 3 minutes. I'm a coach like that really tries to do out there things. I ran no 5-on-0. No 5-on-0 for the year. Everything had defense involved in it at some point. It has to be competitive. Okay, it must be competitive. If you are going to, or if you need to do 5-on-0, break it down, break an element of it and make it competitive.
Yep, I couldn't.
He's a good hire.
It's a good, it's a very good point. But it is a big part of what we do, though. We need those drills early on and the gameplay early on to be competitive, because that's about what they're going to go into next. Like, you might be in a position where, okay, you've had some trial games, you've got a couple of practice games in, so you might have a little bit of an understanding as to what your team looks like, but you really want to know what it looks like when there's defense. Like, every offense looks great 5-on-0. Mm. It's like, oh, we got a clean look. Yeah, well, you probably should. It's that kind of stuff. And even when you go like 5-on-4, you can nearly guarantee that the kid that's not being defended will end up with the open shot. It's like, yeah, of course they will. There's no D. Like, it's that kind of thing. So the more you can break down elements of your offense, then way you're starting to learn how to scramble a little bit defensively, which I think is valuable. You're under the pump. But you can start to teach both sides of the ball at the same time, which is why shell drill and those types of things are really valuable. It's why press break probably should go in fairly early on for a lot of your teams. If you're not in an association that has a style of play and a system of play that, hey, this will happen and then this will happen and this will happen. Okay, you might need to work some stuff out. Like, it's, I know we got a comment on X a little while ago about, look, you know, what have you got for press breakers, especially this time of year coming into grading? It's like, yeah, valid point. Like, and it was really simple. Is there a pass down the line? Is there a pass to the middle? Is there a reversal pass? Like, if you can cover off those three things in your press break, you're golden. Mm. Like, you'll be able to work it out from there. You don't need, I don't think, to overcomplicate it. Like, simple is better.
But when you talk about competitiveness in sessions, let's even go a level below, because I think we've been more so talking probably the VJBL level.
Yep.
If we go the level below and talk domestic, and domestic, let's say under 10s,
yep,
how often do you get asked, can we play a game? Can we play a game? Can we play? And it's, or can we play numbers? You know that numbers drill?
I hate numbers.
But why are they
but
asking
they're that? Asking yeah. that because that's what they want to do. They want to. So if you make all of your drills, your skill set drills, or concept drills competitive, they'll still ask it at the start because they won't realize what's happening. But as you go through, they'll eventually stop asking to play games because their whole session will feel like a big game rather than. It might not be 5v5, but it might be 3-on-3, 3-on-2, 4-on-2, 4-on, you know, 3, like yep. all that sort of stuff. And now all of a sudden you're getting skill set and decision making in whilst tricking them into thinking you're just allowing them to play a game.
Well, and it's funny because like when we think back to like the COVID days, we ran a lot of community coaching courses online. Like, I think I delivered over 100 of them in various lockdowns, which was usually in the other room to Zoe, who would have to sit there and listen to the whole spiel again as I'm going through all of this. And that was one of my points was, you know, my little under-10s team used to say, when can we play a game? Can we play a game yet? When can we play a game? Like, I needed to sort of trick them into, oh, you know, not yet, not until we get this stuff right. No. Put them in a game situation straight away. And how we sort of package it up to coaches at the moment, it's like when you want your kids to eat the veggies. It's like if you just put broccoli on the plate, they won't eat that. But if you blend it up and you put it into a burger, it's like, burgers, how good's this? It's like, yeah, great meal. Like, I really endorse this. You can kind of trick them into working on things they don't realize they're working on because they're in that competitive environment.
There's things as well that you can do to manufacture it. So, like, if you have to go through the broccoli or basketball, let's say it's form shooting,
yep.
right? Young kids are just like, oh, here we go. But there was a guy, Nathan Dance, used to work at Casey Cavaliers. He had a brilliant idea where it was championship points. So correct form would get you 1 point, swish could get you 1 point, and they would go up and down on the ladder. So kids worked really hard to try and compete in form shooting. So there's ways to maneuver it if you have to do that stuff. Some things you can't just go, everything's got to be competitive. Obviously, it's a really good point with the domestic. You know, you've got to go through those things, right?
Yep.
So.
Yep, yeah, I really like that. I hadn't heard the championship stuff before. I really like that. I did see one during the week. Doesn't shine a great spotlight on the player in question, which was free throw golf, and it was the Brooklyn Nets were going through it, and it was like if you, I think it was a swish, you were -3. If it went in but hit the ring, it was minus two. If it went in but it hit the backboard, it was minus one. And if you missed the shot, you were plus one. And like the leading score was like minus 27 because, you know, they made everything. The highest score was like plus 11. Unfortunately, it was Ben Simmons. But it is one of those things where you can make everything into a game if you really look hard enough for it. There are ways to get them engaged. And an engaged team early will be such a better experience for everyone. It's not just more fun to coach. It's more fun for the kids to be in. And that's a big part of what we do as coaches. So I must admit, there is a resource on the E-Train U website with Basketball Victoria, which is the first 3 weeks of coaching, which does highlight a few of these things as well. But we have tried to unpack a little bit more as to what you're potentially going to go through as coaches. So there is a little bit more around and out there. And if you've got resources within your association, please tap into those as well. That's a really big part of it. And you can go from that point. That does wrap us up for this week. This has gone super quick, and I know you've got a meeting, Zoe, so you know it's. I'm very conscious of time. Just a reminder for coaches out there, coach shout-outs, please send them through. If you've got anyone that you want to give a little bit of love to in that coaching space, because, again, volunteers, they do it tough this time of year, please send it through. Even if you want to shout-out your admin person that's helped with trials, like look after those people. I cannot stress it enough. Like Craig Hockley, patience of a saint, that has been working with the BVC crew of late. Book club, we'll be back next week. I've nearly finished a book, so I'll bring that to the table next week as we get through that. Anything on social media that you see that's like, hey, this is pretty good value, can you discuss that? Send that through as well. We'll try and get a little bit of everything into the podcast for these last, I think, 8 episodes now we're up to at the end of this. Nick, well done. You got through.
Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it. It's pretty dangerous that I'm getting you guys so off topic, but
get used to it.
Yep.
Like it's usually how the podcast plays out. Zoe, thank you once again for jumping in. Coaches, good luck with everything, and we'll catch everyone again next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform, and don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.